Welcome to Ales and Strange Tales. We are your hosts,
Chris Moyers
and Dan Stickney. We like to crack open a beer or two and share tales of the supernatural, paranormal, and just plain strange.
So sit back, grab yourself a drink, and dive into the strange with us. Welcome back to Ales and Strange Tales, Season 4, Episode...
4.
4.
4. 4.
Double 4. It's hot today, isn't it, Dan?
It's too damn hot.
It's way too hot. It's humid. I almost died at work. Going up a ladder today, in the beginning of the day, I couldn't breathe.
I know, you work outside. I work inside, but in a shop with zero air conditioning.
Dude, that might be even worse. No wind or anything.
Well, you know, we have fans.
Yeah, fans
but
don't do
still,
shit.
Yeah. Well, especially when I'm spraying paint for cabinets and I have a mask on.
Oh, God, I couldn't
dripping
even
dripping sweat.
Fuck that. Yeah, I was soaked yeah. all day today.
It's fucking terrible.
We have a friend. I won't name him because I don't want him to get hate mail or anything. He loves the hot, humid weather.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking
he
about.
He loves humidity. His name's Mark. Send him hate mail. He deserves it, man. Every time he says it, I have an out-of-body experience trying not to just start screaming. But fuck this heat.
But yeah, fuck this shit.
Is it getting worse the following days, or is it going to cool off?
I haven't looked at the... Let's see real quick here, but like anybody cares. Right now it's 87. It was a high of 94. Tomorrow, 94.
Oh, God.
Saturday, 87. But then it goes down. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, 81, 82. 85. But it's the humidity that really fucking kills you.
Yeah, I hate it.
Like 80% or something sucks.
You know, they say at least hell's a dry heat. That's got to be better than this.
Yeah.
I prefer the winter. What do you think?
No, I like fall.
Well, I prefer the fall, but if I had to pick between the dead of heat, summer heat, or just the coldest-ass fucking winter day, I'd take the cold-ass winter day.
I don't know about that. It's tough.
I'll bundle up, get those little hand-warmer things in my fucking gloves. I can't do the heat. Our buddy Brad won't even come out to the bar today because he's too fucking hot working today.
I can go with like 70s. That'd be perfect. 70?
Yeah, 70s with some wind, overcast.
Not too
I can
humid.
Handle that.
That'd be great.
Fuck the weather. Anyway, today, I hope I didn't cover it on the podcast. I don't think I did. I'm going to cover the Mad Gasser of Mattoon. I think that's how you pronounce it. Mattoon, Illinois. In the 40s.
I don't think you covered that.
So it's slightly local, central Illinois. What do you got?
Another story from Steve, man. This guy sent us a lot of stuff. This one popped out. This one's pretty good. Pretty interesting, I think. I'll let you know what it is later. I don't want to spoil it right now.
Yeah, because it's a wild one.
Sponsor for... I just found it right now. A sponsor for today's show.
Really? You want to do it now or
it's
at the
actually,
end of the show?
Yeah. It's a little quick one.
Hop it in.
It's from the weather. And he says, fuck you too.
Well, I got the gist of that today. He said, fuck you all day to me.
Well, yeah.
You know, I say weather, fuck you back. Well, thank you again, weather, for sponsoring the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, man.
We haven't had a sponsor in a while, so we needed that.
We need some more.
Now, do you have a strange news that you're covering?
Yeah, I got some strange news out of Jersey, I think.
All right, I do too, but if we run out of time, I'll save mine for next episode. Yeah. So I won't even tell you what it is.
Good.
It's pretty interesting.
What are you drinking?
I almost bypassed the beers and went right into the story. I do not like this one very much. It's Bell's Hazy Hearted. Wait, I thought it was Two Hearted.
Isn't it? I think they do have a Two Hearted.
Doesn't say it where the fuck?
No, it's just Hazy Hearted.
Are we missing the two?
I think there is a Bell's Two Hearted.
This is it, because I remember thinking, I have two hearts. I'm such a caring individual. This should be my nickname.
Yeah.
But I don't see it on the can, but it's Bell's Hazy, I think, Two Hearted IPA. It's a 7.5. Where are they out of, do you know?
Maybe around here. Bell's Oberon. Oberon is their, like, lager, I think, or some summer lager. I don't know. But
yeah, it's Michigan, maybe?
Michigan, that sounds probably about right.
It's a cool can. It's got some dumb looking fish on there that I kind of like. I wouldn't get it again. It was $14, which really hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
What do you got?
I may have had this one. I was in the rush. Hit the old gas station, the old Casey's.
Mm-hmm.
Kona Brewing, Big Wave. It's Golden Ale. Pretty good.
It's a cool can.
Can with some, well, it's like probably Hawaiian, I guess. I was Hawaiian gonna say tribe. Hawaiian. In a canoe or whatever. Riding a wave. I don't know where they are. In Georgia.
Georgia? Hawaiian shit in Georgia?
Cartersville. Wait, hold on. There's a brewed by Kona. They got, they're in Cali. They're in Colorado. They're in Georgia. They're in New Hampshire. And Portland, Oregon.
They get around, huh?
Yeah. At least Portland's kind of by Hawaii.
You know what's really cool about it? I have a Hawaiian shirt on currently.
Perfect. You should be drinking this.
I should. You should be drinking this bullshit beer. You fish, don't you? I do not.
I've been. Once in a while.
Even if I went, I'd get so hammered, I wouldn't even fucking care about fishing. It'd just be a rod near me.
Is that what happens all the time?
I knew that was coming right when I said it. Fucker. Not that there's anything wrong with rods around you. I just don't prefer that. Anyway, since you got the strange news, you should probably go first, I would say.
Okay. This one's from Steve.
This one's pretty awesome.
He calls it Twin Evil Spirits. In 1986, I was 17 years old. I was into martial arts. At that point, I was good with weapons. I trained hard. I was really mastering advanced weapons. Nunchucks.
Ooh, wow.
There's a lot of eyes in here. I should have edited this. I had a pair of Cherrywood swivel chucks and a pair of octagon chucks. I'm not a chuck expert, but
no,
sounds cool.
It does sound cool.
One night I was told to get rid of them. At a prayer meeting in my girlfriend's home, I had my equipment bag and the two pair of nunchucks with me. In the meeting, they said if I had them, I needed to get rid of them. I literally had a fight in my head. Should I listen or should I just take them home? I was back and forth fighting in my head. The meeting came to an end. It was my girlfriend and myself and her mother and little brother. I was still debating if I could even let go of them. But something was literally convincing me to get rid of them. The church people that were there for the meeting said they come from Eastern religions. I had to get rid of the nunchucks? At some point towards evening, around just before dark, there was a burning trash barrel in the backyard. My girlfriend's brother had it lit, burning trash. I threw both sets into the fire. I stood back. I saw two all-black demons holding hands, walking away from me.
What the fuck?
They both drifted right out of that burn barrel and went down the alleyway away from me. They both had no feet, so I guess probably like floating action going on.
Oh, yeah.
I shook with fear. I was in shock. I tried for the next 3 hours to get past what I just experienced.
Oh. There you go. Let it out.
I burnt the nunchucks. I saw two black spirits. Horns on both their heads. They jumped out of that burn barrel, went down the alley with no feet, drifting. Got about 20 feet or so and just vanished. Right in front of my eyes. My eyes were opened up. I was a fresh Christian. My Bible said I should not put any other gods before me. Well, I got rid of the ninja gear. All of it just stopped. The things that come out of that burn barrel weren't right. Twin demons. Twin evil spirits. It was very scary. I don't know. I don't own any of those weapons anymore.
This dude has one of the wildest lives I've ever heard. Yeah. That's fucking crazy.
He's got a bunch of crazy stories. And, well, he says they're all true, and I want to believe him.
We're going to attempt to believe him. But that is wild.
Yeah, and we appreciate him sending them.
Yeah, keep them coming.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a wild one, huh?
That's one of the wilder ones. Yeah.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. I'm sure we'll get some more from him. All right, I got a long one. This might be a two, even three-parter because we're already 10 minutes in. We sure do a lot of bullshitting, didn't we?
All right. Weather.
It's weather. That's the scariest part of this show is the weather. It's nuts. Well, this is from AmericanHauntingsInc.com, so we appreciate it. It's entitled The Madgasser of Mattoon. Is that how it's pronounced? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea.
I don't understand else it could be pronounced.
Yeah.
Mystery and Mayhem in Weird, Illinois. Well, here we go. In early September 1944, a strange series of events occurred in the small central Illinois town of Mattoon. According to eyewitnesses, numerous sightings, and even physical evidence left behind, the town was under attack by a mysterious man in black who was, for unknown reasons, spraying some sort of paralyzing gas into windows of unsuspecting residents. Wow.
Yeah.
Who this man was, what his agenda might have been, and where he vanished to all remain a mystery to this day. The bizarre events began on the night of August 31st, when a man awakened feeling sick. He questioned his wife about leaving the gas stove on, but when she tried to get out of bed to check, she was unable to move.
Huh.
Later, it was learned that a neighbor experienced the same effects that same exact night. The next night, Miss Burnt Kearney was awakened by a strange, sweet smell in her bedroom.
Sorry, I had to put that in there.
When she tried to move, she found herself temporarily paralyzed. Her screams brought neighbors, who called the police, but no sign of a gas leak was found. Around midnight, Burt Kearney returned home from work, unaware of what had happened earlier that evening. As he turned into the driveway, he spotted a man lurking near the house, dressed all in black, close-fitting clothing, and a black watch cap. He was standing near a window when Kearney spied him and turned to run away. Thinking he was a window peeper, Kearney gave chase but lost a man in the darkness.
Damn.
As the events of the two nights became publicly known, panic gripped the town. The newspapers handled the story in a wildly sensationalistic manner, and years later would be blamed for creating hysteria that would be used to explain all the weird things that happened. But the newspapers could not be blamed for the very real happenings taking place in Mattoon. By the morning of September 5th, the Mattoon Police Department had received reports of four more gas attacks. The details in each of these attacks were eerily similar, even though none of the witnesses had compared notes or had time to check their stories. In each of the cases, the victims complained about a sickeningly sweet odor that caused them to become sick and slightly paralyzed for up to 30 minutes at a time.
Damn.
Later on the night of September 5th, the real clues of the Madgasser case were discovered. They were found at the home of Carl and Balua Cordis. But what the clues actually reveal still remain a mystery. The Cordis returned home to find a white cloth lying on their porch. Miss Cordis picked it up and noticed a strange smell coming from it. She held it up to her nose and felt immediately nauseated and lightheaded. She nearly fainted, and her husband had to help her inside. Moments later, her lips and face began to swell, and her mouth began bleeding.
Jeez.
The symptoms lasted almost 2 hours. The police were called, and they took the cloth into evidence. As they searched the property, they also found a skeleton key and an empty tube of lipstick that was found on the porch.
Weird.
They decided the prowler was probably trying to break into the house, but had failed. Apparently, he had dropped the lipstick and a cloth with a gas residue on it. The mystery was just getting deeper by the day. Later that night, the gasser attacked again, this time spraying gas into an open window. The attacks continued, and Mattoon residents began reporting fleeting glimpses of the gasser, always describing him as a tall, thin man in dark cloth. thin man in dark clothes and wearing a tight black cap. More attacks were reported, and the harried police force tried to respond to the mysterious crimes that left no clues behind. Eventually, the authorities even summoned two FBI agents from Springfield to look into the case, but their presence did nothing to discourage the strange reports. Panic was widespread, and rumors began to circulate that the attacker was an escapee from an insane asylum or a German spy who was testing out some sort of poisonous gas. Armed citizens took to the streets, organizing watches and patrols to thwart any further attacks. But several took place anyway. The gas attacks were becoming more frequent, and the attacker was leaving behind evidence like footprints and sliced window screens.
So the more people that got out watching around, the more attacks happened.
Yeah, they weren't doing shit. Yeah. They weren't doing anything. A local citizens' vigilance group did manage to arrest one suspect as the gasser. But after he passed a polygraph test, he was released. Local businessmen announced that they would be holding a mass protest rally on Saturday, September 10th, to put more pressure on the already pressured Mattoon police force. He was becoming a political liability and a blot on the public image of the city. The gasser, apparently not dissuaded by armed vigilantes and newspaper articles, resumed his attacks. The first incident took place at the home of Miss Violet Driscoll and her daughter Ramona. They were awoke late in the evening to hear someone removing the storm sash on their bedroom window. They hurried out of bed and tried to run outside for help, but the fumes overcame Ramona and she began vomiting. Her mother stated that she saw a man running away from the house. A short time later that night, the gasser spread fumes into a partially open window of a room where Miss Russell Bailey, Catherine Tuzo, and Miss Genevieve Haskell and Miss Haskell's young son were sleeping. Wow, what a full bedroom. At another home, Miss Frances Smith, the principal of the Columbian Grade School, and her sister Maxine were also overwhelmed with gas and became ill. They began choking as they were awakened and felt partial paralysis in their legs and arms. They also said that as the sweet odor began to fill the room as a thin blue vapor, they heard a buzzing noise from outside and believed that it was the gasser spraying apparatus in operation. By September 10th, mad gasser paranoia had peaked. FBI agents were trying to track down the type of gas being used in the attacks, and the police force had to divide its time between looking for the gasser and keeping armed citizens off the streets. Neither law enforcement agencies were having much luck. By the following Saturday night, several dozen well-armed farmers from the surrounding area had joined the patrols in Mattoon. In spite of this, six attacks took place anyway.
Jeez.
Including the three previously mentioned, another couple, Miss and Mrs. Stuart B. Scott, returned to their farm on the edge of Mattoon late in the evening to find their house filled with a sweet-smelling gas. We are going to cut it off there. That's the halfway mark for this story.
Yeah.
It's getting pretty wild.
There's
man.
A lot of shit going on here.
There's everyone patrolling, and they're still not finding this fucking guy.
They're all blind, I guess.
Yeah, what the fuck? So we'll resume that next week. We got 10 minutes, so we might be able to get both strange news in.
Dang.
And it is time for...
Strange news. All right.
Take it away, broski.
This one comes out of New Jersey off NPR, Chris's favorite news. A massive dump of pasta in New Jersey sets off a fury of interest and also a fury.
I thought you were going to say something after that.
No, that's okay. Sadly, it's not unusual for things to be dumped in New Jersey, but a recent case brought a new twist. Hundreds of pounds of pasta left along a local brook, and a mystery about it, who did it and why. There's a picture, like,
is it a pasta?
That's a shit ton of pasta.
That is a shit ton. I'm assuming that's a real photo of this.
Yeah. I'll have to post it. I gotta remember to post it. Workers in Old Bridge Township found 15 wheelbarrow loads of illegal dumped pasta along a creek in a residential neighborhood. Old Bridge Business Administrator Himanshu Shah told NPR, the pasta came in a variety of shapes, from spaghetti to macaroni.
Oh.
Mounds of it sitting along a wooded bank of Irsic Brook. Photos from the scene set off a range of reactions, from pasta puns to bafflement over who would do such a thing and why.
I would love to hear some of these pasta puns.
Maybe they got, I don't know. But for residents like Nina Jacknowitz, the noodles' unexplained appearance was the last straw.
Oh, shit.
Quote, at this point, I don't know who did it, she told the NPR, but this story is not about that, unquote.
Should be kind of about that, right?
For her, it's not who dumped the pasta, but why. While people fixate on the Pastagate aspect of the story, Jacknowitz said, quote, the story really is about the fact that in Old Bridge, we do not have bulk garbage pickup. It has been a point of contention for the entire time I've lived in this town, 23 years.
So she's claiming that they don't have bulk garbage pickup, so somebody dumped 100
pounds. What jagoff has a bulk of unused pasta? When Jacknowitz, an environmental activist and former township council candidate, posted images of the dump pasta on Facebook a week ago, it set off an uproar of interest and questions. She estimated the pasta to weigh 300 or 400 pounds.
What? Really? The fuck?
Look at this. Hold another. Looks like a bunch of
SpaghettiOs or something.
Yeah, the little rings. I don't know what those are called. Quote, my initial reaction is exactly what yours was, Jacknowitz told NPR. It was funny and humorous and mortifying. It's funny because it's pasta and not garbage. It's humorous because you can make a lot of jokes. And then I'm horrified because, of course, it is a potential contamination for the nearby stream and river.
Oh, he's really mortified and horrified from fucking pasta.
And there's a question. Was it cooked or raw? There have been conflicting reports about whether the pasta was cooked and then dumped. Man, it'd be a waste. It's a huge waste. Why would they cook 300 pounds and then dump it?
It did look cooked in those piles, though, didn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because it's not, like, stiff and straight.
It
looked
all wiggly. But water might have done that, just getting wet. I don't really know the ins and outs of pasta.
Or if it merely grew soft and limp from rainfall.
Been there, bro!
Shaw says the city believes several hundred pounds of uncooked pasta was taken out of its packaging and dumped on the ground.
I guess just moisture would do it too, I guess.
Yeah. It looks, quote, it looks like it was only there for a short time, but moisture did start to soften some of the pasta, he said. Two workers from the city's public works department were able to clean up the area in less than an hour. Jacknowitz thanked the city's public work agency for the rapid response to what was dubbed, quote-unquote, Mission Impastable.
Oh, yeah, there's a
Impastable.
Pun. There's one of the puns. I just want to say this. This asshole was horrified and mortified and only took 1 hour to clean up. Fuck that guy.
It may have been a woman, I think. I don't, either way.
Oh, fuck that person.
Mission Impastable. Impastable.
I like that a lot.
Saying that when the crew removed the pasta, they also cleaned out all the garbage tossed in the basin. There's a little bit more, but that's pretty much it.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, I got a rocket. Did you say who that's from?
Yeah, your favorite, NPR.
Oh, yeah, you did. Let me see if I could find this fucking thing. Oh, it's saying to myself. One moment. This one's a doozy. This is from Yahoo.com.
Yahoo!
You remember those commercials? Yeah. I didn't even know that shit existed still.
I don't think they do.
Well, they do because they printed this. Or
oh, Yahoo
this.
Does. Yeah, not that commercial.
Oh, yeah, the commercial's long gone. Well, this is entitled, A Man Dressed as Darth Vader Ran a Mile in Death Valley's Lethal Heat. His advice to others, don't. A man, be a lot of that, dude, in Death Valley. A man dressed as Darth Vader ran a mile at full pelt in California's Death Valley on Sunday.
That's insane.
It is. Undertaking an eccentric annual tradition in some of the hottest temperatures on the planet right now. New Mexico-based John Rice, 52, no relation to the pasta story. Rice and pasta.
Rice and pasta. Yeah.
Unless you get rice-roni, there's vettuccine or something. That's a pasta, right? Yeah. Who knows? Has done this for the last 13 years, sprinting a mile in what he calls the Darth Valley Challenge.
Oh,
another pun.
Hey.
Damn. This year, amid global heat waves, temperatures soared to 128 degrees Fahrenheit as Rice costumed up. Incredibly, this wasn't as hot as some previous runs he undertook. But even that heat is tough when you're trying to breathe through a plastic mask with some poorly drilled air holes, he told Insider.
Poorly drilled air holes.
Death Valley is popularly known as the hottest place on Earth, a moniker not to be taken lightly given that extreme heat events globally have become a defining feature of 2023. But it hasn't deterred visitors. In fact, quite the opposite. Tourists flock there in droves when temperatures reach 130 degrees Fahrenheit recently. I wouldn't be there.
Fuck
the
that.
Fuck? This year, while authorities were advising people to avoid strenuous activity, this jagoff was gearing up to make himself as hot as possible.
All black, too, man.
Yeah. But he says, I have trained for years in the sauna to acclimate to these temperatures, he told Insider. Although the run itself is supposed to be fun and whimsical, dropping dead in the desert isn't, he added. Thanks for the fucking tip. I simply wouldn't do this unless I was properly trained, had an escape plan, which I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
I guess it's taking off the mask.
Yeah, I guess. Laying there
nude.
Bullshit.
And knew precisely how to recognize and counter the symptoms of a heat stroke. Rice maintains a dedicated website about the Darth Valley Challenge, which, among other things, gives his times each year. Some people collect porcelain kittens. I run in the heat.
Porcelain kittens. Who's collecting porcelain kittens?
Yeah, and who's running in the heat? That's two of the most rare fucking hobbies I've ever fucking heard. You know, it's same shit. It just keeps going. But he says, now he wears, I don't know what this is, a balaclava? Balaclava?
Baklava.
That's what I was thinking the whole time. Thermal underwear and a compression shirt all underneath the feigned costume and black helmet per the outlet. He enjoys passing on a tiny bit of wonder to onlookers with the stunt, he told the Post.
It's pretty wild.
He also faced driving winds and the full force of the sun on his return leg. This is what he says. The scorching air being forced into the mask makes it even harder to breathe. We would have figured that.
Yeah, no shit.
And I was coughing for a few hours afterwards. And it, well, believe it or not, this, asked for his advice to others who might want to take on the challenge, he simply said, don't. And I will take his advice.
Yeah, you will die.
And not, I would die. It was like 100 and something here today, and I almost died.
Yeah.
So,
imagine 130.
Yeah. Not for me.
Fuck that.
Anyway, we did a full 30 minutes this time.
Hey.
Well, we do got to edit out a bunch of shit, so we'll see if it stays there. Anyway, if you have any strange tales or anything interesting, send it to us at alesandstrangetales@gmail.com.
Find us on Facebook, same name, Insta. And
send us hate mail to hand out flyers so we get some kind of fan base.
Send us out you hate the show.
Yeah.
So we can read that, too.
We'd love to read that on the air.
Yes.
Anyway, that'll do it for this episode. This is Chris Moyers.
And Stickney.
Cheers.
Cheers.